made USAA insurance for veterans like James. When he found out how much USAA was helping members save, he said,
"It's time to switch.
We'll help you find the right coverage at the right price. USAA. What you're made of, we're made for. Restrictions apply."
This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and Upsnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Madeira Show, where he will discuss testosterone optimization and full body health for the high-performance modern man. Now, here's your host, Dr. Madeira.
Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Madeira back here on my show, and today we have a special guest, Dr. Brianne Callinan. And she's a naturopathic doctor who is clinically focused on hormones, gut health, and autoimmune conditions up in the Toronto, Greater Toronto area in Canada. She is the author of the Amazon best-selling book, Wild and Free, and the founder of The Wild Side Wellness. She believes that everyone deserves to live to their full potential and that when people are well, we can change the world, which is definitely true. We can do a lot more when we're well. So how are you doing today, Dr. Brianne?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast, and I'm excited to get started.
Yeah, we're going to talk about male and female hormones and help educate our listeners more about what women can do for hormones. I mean, typically we're all focused on men on this podcast, and most of your patients are female. Is that correct?
Most of my patients are female. Yes, that's correct.
Great. So we'll get the female expertise here. And I would say, I mean, my patients are probably a 50-50 split. Depends on the month and the year and all that. But sometimes it's more men than women. So we can help educate couples, male and female couples, female-female couples, and male-male couples on hormones today. We can hit all audiences, which is really exciting. So you're up in the Toronto area, and you also travel to another clinic in another part of Canada. Where are your clinics located?
That's correct. So I have a clinic in Guelph, Ontario, as well as a practice in a small town in Saskatchewan outside of Saskatoon. And we also work virtually with clients around the world.
Spectacular. That's great. So you, I know you're traveling a lot. You're always busy, and you also have, is it one or two kids?
I have a four-year-old and a seven-year-old, so it's quite busy. And I can absolutely say that the better your health is, the better your mindset is, the more you're resilient to the stress, especially with traveling and having young kids and running a business. If you want to do a lot, if you have a lot of goals and you want to live to your full potential, the healthier you can be, the more seamless it becomes and less overwhelming for sure.
That's a great message for our listeners. I notice a lot of women today are, you know, it's like they're doing three jobs in one. You know, they have the kids, they have the home stuff, relationship with their significant other, husband or wife, and their career. And their career is usually taking up most of their time. And then the rest is family and hopefully sleeping. And there's not much time for things like enjoying a sex life. There's not much time for old hobbies or exercise or even eating healthy meals. So hopefully we can help women today and men or their significant others, if it's a female-female couple, understand how they can optimize their hormones and why that's important for optimal health and energy so they can kind of like still have it all, so to speak.
Said that. Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you there because
I think that's ahead.
Like the huge foundational aspect that oftentimes when I'm treating women and they're feeling a lack or they're wanting to do something and they're not able to fit it in, it's about looking at what are the things that I have in my life that I absolutely have to do? What are the things that I could let go of or delegate? And what are some things that I'm feeling that are lacking right now? And how can I switch it so that I can be fulfilled and have purpose? And once you're able to get in more of those things that you truly enjoy, the things that bring you joy, it's a huge weight off in terms of our stress hormone cortisol, which is often at the root of so many other hormone imbalances, that we really have to look at what we want our day to look like. What would your ideal day look like? You're probably not going to get the Ferrari tomorrow, but there are probably some things in your ideal day that we could start implementing now. And that could be as easy as scheduling me time in terms of when you have a shower, you just make that shower glorious. You set boundaries, you make sure that you're not interrupted during that time. Maybe you have candles, different scents, buy a new soap. We can incorporate things that make us feel good in our daily life, and they don't have to be spending the entire day at the spa.
That's great. Yeah, it's all about, I think, making it something bite-sized for the everyday person. And, you know, I think what I see all the time is men and women, they're kind of like, well, I don't go to the gym. I don't have time to go to the gym. It's, you know, going to take me 30 minutes to get there, 30 minutes to get home. And then if I work out for half an hour, that's an hour and a half time away from my family, and I need to be home. So, you know, helping people understand that you don't have to, that doesn't have to be like every other night kind of thing. You can do a workout in your living room with your kids, or go for a walk and go to the playground. Getting back to hormones for women, you mentioned something when, you know, before we were talking about how hormones impact women and what men should know about these, you know, what men should know about women's hormones. And unfortunately, what I think men are conditioned to know is like, well, either she's on her period or she's not, right? Either she's menstruating or she's not menstruating. And maybe if they're more privy and know more, then maybe they're thinking, okay, maybe she's ovulating. So
exactly.
Maybe understanding, helping, maybe you can help us men understand that women aren't just in like these three different time periods, and there's a lot more to it day to day than just these kind of like three zones, if you will.
Exactly. And there are, the way I think of the menstrual cycle is I divide it into the two main stages. Stage one, after you've had, after you're done bleeding, essentially estrogen will be higher. And estrogen rises to a point until ovulation. And when all goes well, during the time of ovulation, a woman should feel amazing. She should have a strong sex drive, because physiologically, if there's an egg present there, our bodies are designed to procreate. So about day 14, when a woman ovulates, if the progesterone starts to rise after and everything is well, she should have a really good sex drive. She should be really creative. And as that progesterone rises, calm, zen. Now, if that doesn't happen, if there's no ovulation or that progesterone doesn't rise, that's where we start to see more of the irritability, the overwhelm, the frustration. Even sometimes it presents in women as rage and being more snippy or crying more for no reason. And that's what we see the days actually before the menstrual cycle, that typical PMS or, oh, you're about to get your cycle. That's why. But it doesn't have to be that way. So having PMS, feeling really down or really irritated before your cycle, that's not normal. And the best thing that I can recommend, if you are noticing really big mood fluctuations, either in yourself or in your partner, really go in and work with someone who's trained in functional medicine so that you can get the appropriate testing. So we can see where are your hormones throughout your menstrual cycle and what can we do to optimize that so that you can go throughout your menstrual cycle in an even playing field, feeling calm, cool, and collected. Yes, it's normal for your sex drive to increase around ovulation, but we shouldn't be seeing massive swishes. We shouldn't be seeing overall low sex drive throughout the entire cycle. Those are things that are not normal. And unfortunately, I think in our medical system, especially with women, we're told that that is normal, or we're told that that's part of being a mom, or that's part of life in general. That's just something that you have to deal with. And here's some birth control. It'll help you. That's not correcting the underlying issue and really getting some good functional medicine testing done to see what the main issue is for you can get you on a really, really great treatment plan.
That's very well said. And thanks for saying that. What comes to mind after you saying that is, as a male, kind of bearing witness to the struggle of PMS, untreated PMS, that is, for childbearing women, especially while in naturopathic medical school, it's mostly women in the school. Mm-hmm. It's about 85% female. And for the listener, if you weren't aware of that, so it's like you have a bunch of sisters as a guy, and this is a guy who didn't grow up with sisters. So I had friends and classmates that would kind of share amongst each other, you know, in a small group of people, like, oh yeah, you know, I took like 800 milligrams of ibuprofen so I didn't have to be curled up in the fetal position, like mm-hmm. on my couch, because the PMS cramps are so bad. And some of these people may later have, hypothetically, you know, as we've seen clinically and maybe around our friends and family, we find out, oh, that's fibroids, or that's, you know, endometriosis. So for the listener, if that's you and you just do that every month, like it's taking a vitamin, you know, ibuprofen can cause hormone disruption. It can cause leaky gut. It can cause allergies and food allergies that you may not have had before. And maybe not a huge problem if you're just doing it twice a year, but if you're taking it on a regular basis and you're taking it for, you know, 3 days in a row or 2 days in a row every month at 800 milligrams, that can be substantial, especially if somebody doesn't weigh that much, you know? So point being, that's not a root cause solution. You still have something else going on. There could be something more serious. And I started my medical career in the ER and on an ambulance as an EMT. And I remember very vividly, I was pretty young, I was a teenager, but I remember very vividly a young lady coming in, and they did an ultrasound and found out that one of the ovarian cysts ruptured, and she was in excruciating pain. So, you know, if you're taking ibuprofen, that's a Band-Aid. You know, that's just there for somebody who, like, maybe you sprained your ankle and you taped your ankle and you're waiting for the swelling to go down so you can walk on it or something. But this is your hormones. We're talking about, you know, ovarian health, sexual health today, female hormone health. Maybe the next thing that would be really helpful for people, let's say they're about to go to the doctor. Maybe they have an appointment with a functional medicine doctor or naturopathic doctor. What would be the key tests that you would use if they were coming to see you and they had PMS or they had low libido and some of these things we're already talking about?
Yeah, and that's a great example that you used, because when we're seeing someone who has really bad cramps or menstrual pain or heavy menstrual cycles, we want to really understand where the estrogen and progesterone is. We want to understand, you know, is progesterone low? Or is progesterone normal and estrogen's high? In both of those examples, it leads to an overall higher level of estrogen, and estrogen makes things grow. So we have estrogen receptors on various different organ systems in our bodies. We have estrogen receptors on the breasts. If you have estrogen dominance, you might experience breast tenderness. If you also have estrogen dominance, you're more likely to gain weight in the lower half, so the buttocks and the legs, as well as estrogen receptors on the uterus. So essentially the uterine lining grows more, leading to heavy menstrual cycles. And then in addition to testing your hormones, we need to understand why that is. And I think people aren't digging deep enough when it comes to hormone imbalances. Just because your progesterone is low, yes, we can support it, but we want to understand, why is it low in the first place? Is it low because you're actually not ovulating? We should know that. Is it low because you have too much cortisol, your stress hormone? If that's the case, yes, we can support progesterone with different types of herbs or hormone replacement therapy. But if we're not fixing the lifestyle, which is the cortisol piece, it's helpful, but it's not getting to the root cause. So what I like to do is look at all the hormones: estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, cortisol. In my practice, I'll typically use blood work, or I really love the Dutch test, because it's one, it's urine testing you can do at home. It's superior for cortisol testing, because cortisol should be higher in the morning and lower at night. And if you just do one blood test, you're only getting one sample of that cortisol curve. We want to know, does it rise when it's supposed to rise? Is it low when it's supposed to be low? And the urine testing will show you that, which I really like. In addition, I am always running a thyroid panel and a vitamin D level on my patient via blood work. I find that that's really important. There are a lot of undiagnosed subclinical or clinical hypothyroidism that we really want to pick up, as well as hyperthyroidism. So those are my foundations, doing a comprehensive panel so we can see everything at the exact same time, thyroid, cortisol or stress hormone, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. Once we are able to look at everything, we have a clear picture of exactly how these hormones are being produced and how they're being metabolized. So I think that's really important. And I also focus a lot on gut health. We do know that there's certain bacteria in the gut that produce an enzyme that causes estrogen to be recycled. So maybe you're able to metabolize and detox your estrogens just fine, but if they're being recycled in the gut, then that's something that we want to optimize too. So I see as every single organ system as interconnected, and one impacts the other. Our mindset impacts our organ systems, our hormones impact our organ systems, our gut microbiome impacts our hormone system. So the more you can do a comprehensive look at each organ system, then you can pull the whole picture together and really show the story of exactly what's going on.
Well said. That's a very comprehensive approach. Just to roll back a little bit for the listeners, what is the difference between a AM blood test cortisol and the free cortisol pattern that we're getting in the urine, or if we were to do a saliva, which I don't really do that many saliva tests anymore, but for free cortisol, free cortisone in the Dutch test, you mentioned briefly the benefit of that, but most people are probably, if they're getting it at all, are getting an AM total cortisol, which is your total cortisol. So for the listener, can you explain kind of the free cortisol and the benefits there?
Yeah, so the first problem that I see with blood testing for cortisol, even if you were to do blood testing for cortisol in the morning and at night, one, if you are a busy woman, it is hard for you to get to the lab at a specific time.
When you save on auto insurance for driving safe with USAA Safe Pilot, you'll feel like a big deal, even in a traffic jam. Save up to 30% with USAA Safe Pilot. Restrictions apply.
Oftentimes for my patients, it's stressful to get there. They don't like the needles. Maybe they have to take their kids to school before, or they have to take them with them. And that really doesn't give us an accurate response. So if you are getting to the lab an hour after waking up and it's been a crazy hectic morning for you, your cortisol could be artificially elevated for that. So I really do like using the 4-point urinalysis because I do find that it's much more accurate, and we can get a strong indication of the cortisol awakening response within the first 30 minutes, first hour, is really nice to see that. In addition, there is cortisol, but there's also cortisone. So if we're seeing high levels of free cortisol and cortisone is high as well, this could confirm an overall elevation. But the thing what we have to consider is if the cortisone is not high, that's showing us that the cortisol is being deactivated. So we're wanting to look at what is going on in terms of inflammation, what is going on in terms of the foods that you eat, what is your overall lifestyle, how long have you been stressed for, what are the key stressors in your life, how are you perceiving your stress, because we really need to see how much your body's producing, how much is being deactivated, and how is it being metabolized. So the more we can see that, the more we're able to actually choose key nutrients for you, key lifestyle changes for you, foods that you should be consuming, a way that you should be eating in terms of time-restricted feeding or not time-restricted feeding, in addition to whether or not you could benefit from a prescription or a herbal supplement.
That's a very good overview. Thanks for that. Yeah, I think people are underestimating how much their daily lifestyle inputs play into their hormones. And I think there's this huge disconnect in men and women, potentially more in men because men don't menstruate, right? So we don't have this monthly thing during our premenopausal years to show us, hey, your hormones are either balanced or not. Like maybe you need to check in on this. So I think that garners a little bit more like mind-body disconnection with men, and we're kind of, women too are definitely pushing through way too much in a pathological way. But I think it gives men more permission in a bad way to do that. So I think
I'm seeing more of that in women too, though, now that they're taking on that career role. And recently it's become almost a prize to say that you're busy, and being really busy and being overwhelmed means that you're succeeding at a higher level. And I think we really need to have a look at that and look at how we're defining success and whether or not we need to be busy all the time. You can be successful. There's lots of successful people who are balanced and they're not pushing it to the extreme. And because I deal with hormones and cortisol and weight loss resistance in my practice, I see this all the time. Women are not sleeping adequately, number one. They're not properly fueling their body. They're interpreting stress as something that's good because we're told that we have to be busy. Then they're going to the gym for an hour, and they're really frustrated and confused that I don't understand. I barely sleep. I keep moving all day. I hardly eat. I exercise all the time. Why am I not losing weight? And it's like, we have to look at that stress piece, because stress is not going to be helpful for you in terms of an ideal body composition, as well as just looking for a health optimization and preventing chronic disease. We have to look at cortisol and how that's changing throughout the day and how your lifestyle's impacting that cortisol level. Some people can get away with it. Some people can get away with it for a period of time, and others really need to scale back.
Well said. Yeah, exactly. It does seem like there's this kind of superwoman archetype out there, archetype, if you will. And if people are kind of like down with archetypes, it's like, you know, like Carl Jung and stuff like that in psychology, where it's, I want it all and I'm going to get it all. And that's fine. I mean, I think you and I are probably in that boat too, you know, being the go-getters that we are. However, I think, and I really liked what you said about the busyness, because I hear that all the time when I communicate with my patients and I say, hey, it's time for you to come in and do this test again, or it's time for us to review those results, or, you know, et cetera. And continuously what I hear from men and women is that I'm busy. And it's kind of like, well, take a number, man. Like, we're all busy, you know, everybody's busy. We're busy since the day we're born in this society, in this kind of culture where, and I would like to rephrase or reframe the busyness and say, like, if you're busy, then you're probably not that productive. And this comes from like Tim Ferriss. So if you've listened to Tim Ferriss's podcast, anybody that he says this, he says, you know, if you're really busy all the time, if you are constantly working, then there's something you're doing that is non-efficient and you're wasting your damn time in your life. And somebody else could probably outsource it or get help, hire help, even if it's just one day a week or 1 hour a week. And it's time to ask for help, basically, is what it comes down to. And what we're talking about today.
And it's okay to ask for help, right?
Right.
Like the more you push it to the extreme, and you know, maybe first you feel tired, you ignore that. Then you start to be impatient and irritable, you ignore that. Then you start actually having trouble sleeping, but you ignore that. Then more serious complications start to arise, and your body will send you warning signs. It's like covering up the, you need an oil change button on your car. Eventually your car is going to start breaking down and you're going to have to deal with it. So I want people to be able to accomplish their goals. I want them to be productive. I want them to get everything done that they want to do, but in a way that is healthy for them and is not jeopardizing their overall health.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So something that often comes up when we talk about hormones and with men and women, but we're talking about women right now, is sex and sexual enjoyment, or if low libido, are women having libido? And when they are having sex, is it enjoyable? Are they able to achieve orgasm? So there are some things that we talked about before the podcast around that. And I'm curious about how you're having these conversations with your female patients. obviously it's a little bit different dynamic when they're talking to a male practitioner like myself. However, I would say that if you don't feel comfortable, male or female, talking to your practitioner about something, either get a whole other practitioner completely or have that conversation with a different practitioner. And, you know, I have female patients where we do talk about this and they're fine. And it's like, oh no, I'm just work focused. I don't have a libido. I'm not really that interested and never really have been that interested in sex even before they were overworked. And maybe that's a constitutional thing. However, assuming people want to have more sex, men and women, specifically women here, what are some things that men and women should know about sex and libido and improving those things, whether they're medical interventions, nutritional, herbal, hormone replacement therapy, et cetera? Like, what are you finding that's helpful for you?
So when patients come to me looking for more sex drive, she complained of low libido, we definitely want to run some blood work, right? So we want to know where the hormones are, where's your estrogen, progesterone, where's your testosterone? Testosterone is one that is important in women as well. Where's your DHEA? Where is your cortisol? But then we want to dig a little bit deeper. Has this always been the case for you, or is this something new? Is it that sex is enjoyable for you once you start sex, but you just aren't interested or it doesn't come to mind on a regular basis for you? In addition, do you orgasm during sex? A lot of women will come to me and say, you know, I don't have a high libido. And then we dig into more like, how often are you orgasming? Can you orgasm with sexual intercourse? And if they say no, we have to look at an educational standpoint that not every woman can orgasm with penetration alone. A lot of women need clitoral stimulation. So there's a big educational component to it that if your sex drive is low, but you're not having orgasms, to a degree, it doesn't feel good for you. So it makes sense that it's not something that your body is craving. Is there some confidence issue? Is there some communication issues that we can work through? Are there ways that we can chat with your partner to be confident and empowered to express yourself with what feels good and what doesn't feel good? Mindset is another really important one, embracing your body, embracing your sexuality. A lot of the times we've grown up in a culture that sex is not talked about, or sex is taught as something that's wrong or something we shouldn't be doing. I know in my education, my sex ed was very basic when I was growing up. It was pretty much don't have sex, you'll get pregnant, just don't do it. So there's definitely some more education that needs to be done in terms of how do you embrace your sexuality and digging deep. Like if you are doing self-pleasure and masturbation, is it easy for you to orgasm then? Is it different when you're having intercourse with a partner? And then also knowing that there's a mismatch between men and women. The typical time to orgasm for men is 7 minutes, and for females, it's 30. So understanding that if you're not reaching an orgasm at the exact same time that your partner is, within a couple minutes, within 7 minutes, that's normal for you as a woman. And we need to have that communication and understanding between partners so we can have an open conversation about it and incorporate things so that both parties can feel pleasure. Because once you're having daily orgasms, that's going to set you up with a positive mindset that orgasm is something that I enjoy. Orgasm is something that I can achieve. And we have to look at, is there limiting beliefs or mindset issues that come when you think about sex that it becomes more of a stressor for you? Okay, I'm going to have intercourse. It's going to take so long for me to orgasm. I'm not going to enjoy it. And all those thoughts that are coming into your mind, we really need to break those apart and see which ones we can shift so that you can be satisfied and happy and feel empowered with your sexuality.
Yeah, that's really well put. And just to reiterate, what was the difference in time, again, that it takes men versus women to orgasm?
For men, average 7 minutes, and for women, 30. So we have to keep in mind that not all women can have an orgasm with internal stimulation. A lot of women need clitoral stimulation to reach orgasm, and we need to empower ourselves and educate ourselves and figure out what feels good for us, figure out where those key spots are for us and different things that we can do, whether it's through self-pleasure with your partner, the use of things like vibrators often can be helpful for some women, and being okay with the discomfort. Like if it's uncomfortable for you to talk to your partner about it, give yourself some grace, have an open and honest communication, and be empowered to express what makes you feel good.
Definitely. I mean, that's cornerstone for every relationship is strong communication across the board, but especially if, you know, sex is an issue or lack of sex. And, you know, get a sex therapist who's trained in sex therapy and couples counseling if this is an ongoing issue for you. Don't put it on the shelf. What I notice is that on the men's side in men's health is when men have either a preconceived notion that they're, you know, not pleasing their partner, they start to blame themselves. And if you're not having that communication, then that can lead to things like anxiety around sex or premature ejaculation, even if that's already an issue or not. Or they can just think, well, you know, this isn't really going well for either of us. And some of us men are, it's like, well, if I'm not good at something, I'm not going to do it, you know? And then it creates this kind of invisible barrier between a couple. So, you know, communication is key. On this similar note, what are some tips that you have shared with your male clients, your male patients to delay orgasm, since there is a, you know, 23 minute difference here on average between men and women, or men at 7 minutes, and for women it's 30. So what are some tips there?
I am a big proponent of foreplay. The more you can do foreplay, switching on and off, you know, having some arousal on the man and switching over to the other partner would be really great, and really focus on, for a lot of women, it's mental, visual stimulation, foreplay that we need prior to intercourse. So the more we can get creative with arousing the woman from those standpoints, catering to the senses that she most prefers, lots of foreplay, as well as taking breaks. So if you feel like you're close to ejaculation, stop moving and squeeze like a Kegel. That is really helpful. The more we can get those Kegel muscles really strong, the more you're going to be able to delay ejaculation. Now, this is important for both men and women to practice on their own, as well as practice with your partner. So if you're a man, get to 80% of the way to orgasm. Really do that Kegel squeeze and stop. Wait, and then proceed again to the 80%. And the same goes for a woman as well. A lot of the times women have this negative conception that it's so hard for them to orgasm and they're not having frequent orgasms. So what we can do if you are a woman is the same thing. Masturbate until you're about 80% to the sensation of orgasm. Stop. And continue. And the more you can do that, the more your body gets used to the feelings of having an orgasm. And it becomes easier for you to have that mental association that this is something that is easy to achieve, because you're getting, you know, if you're doing 7 to 8 times, getting to 80% prior to orgasming, then you've built up that sensation multiple times instead of once a week having sex. Maybe you're maybe not orgasming. I think that's really important.
Great. Excellent. Yeah, that's going to be really helpful for, I think, a lot of men and women. On a somewhat similar note, and I'm throwing you a little curveball here because we didn't talk about this first, but there's the yoni balls for women. And yeah. I've seen them on like social media. I've seen them in like natural integrative pharmacies, health food stores. And I've seen people talk about them, but for our listeners, what are they? What are they useful for? And when and how often do you recommend women use them?
So those are specifically for strengthening the pelvic floor muscles, which is important for women, not only for sexual intercourse and the ability to reach orgasm, but also after childbirth, if you're having any incontinence, these can be really helpful. They typically are various types of crystals, whether it's you know, you can get ones in rose quartz, you can get all sorts of different fancy ones. But essentially what you do is you insert the yoni ball and you practice doing Kegels or pelvic health, pelvic floor exercises. A great option for anyone who is suspicious that their pelvic floor muscles are not where they should be is to see a pelvic floor physiotherapist. I found this extremely helpful for myself and for my patients to get a full assessment, because for some women, it is a reduction in strength. For some women, it's actually the muscles are too tight. So having that internal exam, having a full exam from a registered pelvic floor physiotherapist that specializes in women's health is often really helpful. But in addition to those yoni balls, a really great resource is the Women's Anatomy of Arousal. It's a book that you can just get on Amazon. They actually talk about the yoni balls and where to place them. And the more you can do those exercises on a daily basis, the better it's going to be. Consistency is going to be key. So my recommendation would be to do small, reasonable amounts that you could do every day, holding for 5 seconds, releasing, hold for another five. Even if you can only do 5 to 10 each day, consistency is what's going to be key. I would rather you do small amounts each day than once in a blue moon, setting aside an hour.
That's a great instruction and overview for people, and very educational, I think, for men who have female partners or wives. And I liked what you said for after childbirth, because I think that a lot of women think that after I have a child, things are never going to go back to the same ever, you know?
Yeah. I was fairly young with my first child, and I was told, it's okay, don't worry, you know, peeing your pants is completely normal after childbirth. Welcome to the club. Make sure to not do too many jumping jacks. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that's not normal. And it's not. You don't have to avoid running and jumping jacks and feeling like you have urgencies that you have to get to the bathroom right away, or you can't drink water on a long road trip because you're going to have to stop multiple times. That's not something that is normal. And there's so many great resources out there, whether it's one, looking at your hormones, but also speaking with the pelvic health physiotherapist who can really do a good assessment to see what's going on for you specifically, because it's not normal.
Yeah, I like that you're saying it's not normal, because I would hope women know out there, but you know, there's crazy things that people are told by people that don't know what they're talking about, that things are normal when they're not. Like, it's normal to be, you know, as sick as most people are today and things like that. So
mm-hmm. Or it's a part of aging.
Right. Yeah. Like aging equals illness. I mean, that is what we mm-hmm. hear all the time, right? And people are like 38 and their doctor's telling them, hey, you know, that's normal to be that tired and feel that bad and not have a libido and all those things. As far as, I want to switch gears here to men's hormones, and we can talk about some things that men can do without hormones. Well, hold on a second. Before I do that, I actually had a female patient of mine, who had some specific questions. They have friends that don't think bioidentical hormones are safe and whatnot. So I wanted to dispel kind of the difference or the myths around bioidentical hormones that come from the Women's Health Initiative study. So for people who don't know mm-hmm. what that is, that was a giant study that was done in the early 90s in the United States with women with Premarin and Prempro. And these are horse urine hormones, estrogens, and progesterone. And they're from horses. So they're not bioidentical, and they cause a lot of problems, and they canceled the study, and the media had a field day with it. And it's still in everyone's consciousness or subconsciousness. Whenever you talk about using hormone replacement therapy, they think about this big study. And mm-hmm. that is why we have a constant grind with people, educating people like, hey, it's okay to use testosterone. It's safe. Hey, it's okay to use these hormones. They don't cause cancer mm-hmm. like Premarin does, like Prempro can. Mm-hmm. And in that study, that's what happened, is women got cancer. Some of them had heart attacks and strokes too, And that has been the big fear factory ever since. I mean, this is almost 30 years ago. So what are you telling your female patients about this and saying like, hey, you actually need, you know, we tried some natural things. We can still keep some of those herbs and supplements on board and we should, but we also need, you know, progesterone cream, or we also need you to do some bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. Like, what does that conversation look like with your clients, and what are you hearing from them about the myths that they've been told or the fears that they might have around this issue?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of miscommunication when it comes to hormone replacement. And the first thing to note, exactly what you said, that bioidenticals are from YAM, they're not the same as Premarin. So if you're using this is a different hormone, but if you're using bioidentical progesterone, that's much different than using Premarin for estrogen replacement. Anyone who is on estrogen replacement, whether it's Premarin or a various type of subdrug, I would highly recommend that you access the drug tech sheet. So every single drug will have a information tech sheet on it. And just go read the black box warnings that are on estrogen alone therapy. So estrogen in the form of Premarin should not be used in women who have a uterus without progesterone. And unfortunately, I still see patients coming to me where that is the case. And the risks are really looking at increased risk of estrogen-dependent cancers. So we have to look at where are, one, doing testing, where are your hormone levels right now, and digging as to why. So if your progesterone's low because of your lifestyle and issues with cortisol, we have to work on that. And we really need to work on that so that using bioidenticals are great, but they shouldn't be used as a band-aid approach where we're not addressing any of the diet and lifestyle. I always look at why it's low in the first place and help support it that way. But like you said, the bioidenticals are much, much different, and bioidentical replacement therapy does not equal Premarin with the studies on increasing risk of cancer. So they're much different. And we really want to monitor clinically with the patient signs and symptoms. So if you're using a progesterone, I know it's readily available even on Amazon in the US, I would highly recommend speaking to a practitioner about your dosaging and how you're supposed to take it. I had a patient a couple weeks ago who was using a progesterone cream that she got off of Amazon, and she was struggling with spotting during her cycle. And when I asked her about supplements, you know, it was a couple of visits where she mentioned that she was using this progesterone cream, but she was using it, the bottle had said use half the month, and she was using it every other day. So that's not how you're supposed to be taking a progesterone cream. Half of the month isn't every other day, although it might seem that way to some, because you really need to work with someone who can really recommend where to put it, what the dosage should be, and for how long and what parts of your menstrual cycle you should be using it for, because it changes with every person. In Canada, it is not available over the counter. It is restricted and it does require a prescription, so that's less of an issue. But for those of you who are in the US, be really cautious about just picking up a bioidentical hormone replacement at the drugstore or on Amazon.
Absolutely, yeah, that's very good points. And why should people be taking DHEA, or when and why, I guess, and pregnenolone as capsules, or the DHEA cream?
So that I would refer to your blood work. So we want to look at not only normal levels, but optimal levels, and choose what is specifically right for you. And in Canada as well, those are prescription-only drugs, and DHEA and pregnenolone are prescribed by medical doctors in Ontario, at least. So we really want to look at your blood work, identify why those are low, make sure to use diet and lifestyle to boost them as much as possible, and if required, speak to your practitioner about which one will be right for you. I'm going to let you do a little bit more diving deep into the DHEA and the pregnenolone.
Yes. Okay. Great. Yeah. So hopefully for people listening, that can dispel some mythology around this, like the fear factory of like, how safe is this? you know, folks, if you don't have enough hormones, if you don't have enough testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, pregnenolone, DHEA, and you have too much cortisol, which most people have who are kind of like overdoing it with exercise and overworking, and they're the busy person that everybody says, oh, I'm so busy, and they are, then you probably have low hormones and you need to get testing done. And that's where you have to start. You can't just go like you said, excuse me, Dr. Brienne, like you said, to Amazon and order something and start taking it and then whack out your whole system because, mm-hmm. you know, you read a blog online. So that's dangerous. And hopefully eventually they'll take those things off of Amazon because they should never be on Amazon. Use Amazon to buy like your robot vacuum cleaner and a couple of books or something, or some things for your house, not supplements, and definitely not hormones. That's crazy talk. However, you know, good on you, good on the person who is actually looking for a solution that is more mm-hmm. natural, you know? So I know it's not easy out there in the allopathic, general, dominant community where they're just kind of telling people like, hey, you're just getting old. You got to suck it up and suffer through this. And people are sick of hearing that and sick of being fed medications that they don't really need. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of these hormone symptoms can mimic anxiety and depression, or
absolutely,
like neurotransmitter stuff too, or gut dysregulation too, like you were saying in the beginning.
And even as simple as something like vitamin D, like I think we discount how important vitamin D is. It's not just a vitamin; it acts as a hormone in many ways. And I personally think everyone should be tested for their vitamin D, especially in climates like where I am in Canada, and there's hardly any sun for a significant portion of the year. And even in the summer months, we have to consider how much time we're really spending outdoors versus inside at our career. So definitely vitamin D is one that I would highly, highly recommend. That it can mask and resemble so many other types of issues that people are getting put on antidepressants and anti-anxieties when their vitamin D is just low. So there's lots and lots of things that you can do to optimize your health, but it all starts in working with someone and really understanding your body and what its unique needs are and where are you right now in terms of all those different health markers.
Absolutely, definitely. And on that note, we're talking about light and vitamin D. We were talking about what some men and women can do to improve thyroid and testosterone. I mean, red light therapy is being marketed to help thyroid and testosterone levels, as well as body aches and pains, improving things like sleep and seasonal affective disorder. And that's actually why I got a red light, is because I live in Seattle and there's not a lot of sunshine here most of the year, similar to Toronto. And I have a happy light, but I'm not getting red light from a happy light. And then even when it is sunny outside, we're not getting that much vitamin D or enough red light. So if you're a, you know, workaholic like me and you're busy all the time, you're probably not getting enough sunshine, even if you live in San Diego or Miami Beach. So red light therapy, what else do you have to add to about red light therapy for hormone health? And where does that come mm-hmm. from around the whole testosterone thing in red light therapy?
Yeah, so we are currently waiting on large trials or even some research that suggests that the red light therapy boosts testosterone. But there is a lot of anecdotal before and after blood work on looking at red light therapy for boosting testosterone, especially when applying the red light therapy close to the testicle area. There are people who have shown before and after with blood work showing really interesting, markedly significant increases in their testosterone level. Red light therapy is really amazing for improving mitochondrial function, so the powerhouses inside our cells that produce ATP or energy. It's amazing, like you said, for resetting that circadian rhythm. So especially when I'm traveling and changing time zones, I find it really helpful to have that red light traveling with me. They have an awesome, you can get travel portable size ones that you put on your face or a localized area if you had some inflammation. It's great for skin healing, boosting collagen in the skin. I've seen a really big increase in the amount of hydration that's in my skin right now, and I'm really loving it for those positive side effects. So I think in terms of the hormones really helping with the circadian rhythms and boosting your sleep, we know that sleeping better, sleeping deeper, sleeping more has positive impacts on testosterone, reducing inflammation. In terms of using the red light therapy, may also be a indirect way that it's helping to raise testosterone. And we don't really have research as to exactly why red light therapy would be helpful for testosterone, but those are my hypothesis, because we do actually see an increase after use. And it's short, like you don't need to be spending hours with the red light therapy machine. I typically do 10 minutes on the front of my body, 10 minutes on the back of my body, and I do that right in the morning. Ideally, I'm sure doing it twice a day would be helpful, but I just do it once a day in the morning, and I find that to be quite therapeutic for me.
Excellent. Yeah, I find that all those things, as well as helping with kind of the sleep-wake cycle. So if people are, like you're saying, traveling a lot in between time zones, having a red light can really be helpful to use in the morning. And then sometimes I recommend use it between like 3:30 and 5, not too late in the evening. And to kind of mimic like, hey, the sun's going to go down, but the sun's still out. And in Seattle, if it's been cloudy for, you know, 2 weeks, that can still help me have enough of that kind of drop in melatonin after the sun goes down and the red light's off, that my brain is actually feeling more tired. My body's feeling more tired when it should around 9:30, 10 o'clock, and then I can sleep better. So maybe the combination of the mitochondria support, the combination of helping with sleep is enough to boost relatively healthy people's testosterone. I guess we'll have to get more research done, like you said. So other things that men can do to help testosterone, sleep is something that we both talk a lot about on social media and other things, and stress management, like we've talked about today, you know, people being very busy and finding time to do things. What are some other things that you have found to be super beneficial for your male patients for their testosterone?
I really love resistance training. I find that cardio, prolonged cardio, increases our stress hormone cortisol and is not always helpful. Cardio is great for aerobic training, but if we're looking at improving lean muscle mass, helping to optimize testosterone, I would say lift weights as much as possible. In addition, we know that obesity can lower testosterone. So if we're looking at maintaining a healthy body composition, weight loss would be helpful as well. Adding some of that resistance training, making sure that we're really consuming high quality fats. Cholesterol goes into making our sex hormones. So I love things like olive oil, avocado oil, grapeseed oil. I try to recommend to my patients as much as possible, don't heat oils. Add them to your vegetables after. The more we heat them, in my clinical practice at least, I see they don't have as beneficial effect when they're heated. In addition, make sure to have enough zinc. Zinc is one that I find really helpful for testosterone production. You can, I recommend supplementing with a zinc supplement, as we can measure the dosages, but foods that are high in zinc would be things like oysters, pumpkin seeds, taking a basic multivitamin to make sure that all of your vitamins and minerals are up to date, as well as vitamin D. We really want to know where your vitamin D is to make sure that it's not deficient, impacting your other sex hormones.
Spectacular. And for people listening, vitamin D is actually a hormone. So maximizing all of our hormones can help. It's like a symphony orchestra. We got to keep it all in balance.
And yeah, then, there was one recent vitamin D study that I actually just looked at this morning that showed even 3,000 international units was what they used in the study, boosted men's testosterone 2 times. Wow. So they also, they didn't report if those men who benefited the most were those who were deficient. That would make the most sense to me. If someone's deficient, they're more likely to have a greater benefit. But it was a really interesting study to see that they were noticing that high of an improvement in testosterone levels. So again, hormone replacement therapy can be helpful, especially looking at if you're just in the healthy range of testosterone, the healthy range that's considered quote unquote healthy has been continuing to drop substantially. So more and more we're seeing men with lower levels of testosterone. So we're saying, okay, that's the new healthy level, but that's not optimal. So look at where your testosterone is. And if it's not within the optimal range, definitely replacement therapy can be helpful, but also ask the question of why. Is it because of sleep? Is it because of diet and lifestyle? Is it because of stress? Is it because of low vitamin D? Try to keep asking those questions why, supporting that root cause, because that's how you're going to consistently keep it up versus having to supplement with more and more.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And for people who may not know, back in 2013, the level for testosterone in the US for the more conventional labs was 350 up to 1250, which is, again, a huge range. So you would want it at least, in my book, 800 to 1100. And we're seeing the lab slip down to about a top of the range now, 1000 instead of 1250, or sometimes 1100, depending on which labs people are using. And then the bottom of the range has slipped down 100 points to 250 roughly. So that's how sick people are now. That's like a population study right there. And this is a major lab in the US. This is not just like some mom and pop, like advanced lab testing company on the side. For the listener.
And the thing to keep in mind too is that's a reference range. We have to take into consideration the patient's age. If you are in your 20s, and you have a testosterone of 250 versus in your 90s with a testosterone of 250, they're both considered normal. If you were in your 20s or 30s, even 40s, and your testosterone's at the bottom end of normal, that is not normal and you will be experiencing signs and symptoms. Those signs and symptoms aren't going to be profound to the point where you're creating a disease state necessarily, but it's not going to be a great quality of life. So looking at, you deserve a high quality of life. You deserve to have optimal levels. And if you're not feeling well at the range that you're at, speak with someone who can see about optimizing those levels for you, because maybe you feel great at a 600. Maybe that's the optimal level for you, that unique individual. But for some, they do really require that higher level in order to feel their best.
Absolutely, definitely. And then as far as we were going to talk about some other things, we have a little bit of time left here. So estrogen dominance is huge in men and women today. Most people, I would say, are coming in with estrogen dominance, and aromatase is the enzyme that's stored in fat cells and other parts of the body that's over-converting their testosterone to estrogens in men and women. So when you see this estrogen dominance, what are some tools that you're helping people to decrease this, and are using genetic testing as well? What are some natural things that you recommend typically if they do have this after you get their lab result back?
Absolutely. So if the patient does have their 23andMe lab report, we can run that raw data into a more comprehensive platform that not only looks at what is this gene SNP telling us, but it looks at genetics in terms of how are all the genes impacting one another. So that is one thing that we can look at to determine how does your body detoxify estrogen. In addition, we need to look at if your estrogen's high, where is that estrogen coming from? Are you just producing too much? And there are some genetic SNPs that we can optimize for you to help with that. Is it because you have extra adipose tissue or abdominal weight and that's producing more estrogen, because we know fat is a metabolically active tissue? What is your lifestyle like? What are your cleaning products? What are your skincare products? Are you microwaving your foods? Even worse yet, microwaving with plastics. How much plastic exposure do you have? Are you drinking clean, filtered water? All of this can impact our estrogen levels, because there are chemicals known as xenobiotics, which are compounds that resemble our natural estrogen. So if we think of, if we're using bioidentical hormone therapy and it's a cream, and it's a small amount of cream actually, and that's enough to create physiological changes in your body in terms of your hormones, you can imagine that putting on a cream all over your body can really impact your hormones, specifically if it contains estrogen-resembling compounds. So really be aware of that. Be aware of what types of foods you're eating. So are you eating whole foods or are you eating packaged and processed foods? Because that can be an issue as well. How much sugar is in your diet? Are you eating high fibrous foods or are you eating more of those simple sugars? That is all going to play a critical role in things that we can optimize. Now, when we're looking at estrogen detoxification, a great thing to start to increase in your diet are cruciferous vegetables. I recommend my clients have a serving of cruciferous vegetables at every meal. Cruciferous vegetables contain sulforaphane, as well as compounds that help detoxify estrogen, which I really like. And in addition to detoxifying estrogen, helping with detoxifying other toxins that our liver needs to process. Cruciferous vegetables are things like broccoli, kale, cauliflower, bok choy, Brussels sprouts, all really great options. Now, are you going to be able to consume enough broccoli to have a therapeutic effect at lowering estrogen? Not necessarily. You might need to supplement. So depending on what your blood work comes back as or what your Dutch test comes back as, we might have to use more therapeutic dosages of things like DIM, potentially, if we're looking at elevations in certain metabolites of estrogen or total estrogen is elevated. If it's a conversion issue, like you said, testosterone being converted to estrogen, using things that are known to be aromatase inhibitors, things like chrysin, zinc, or pharmaceuticals, if that's the route that you are drawn to go to. It's all about informed consent in my practice. So we give patients, here are all of the options that could treat this. Here are the benefits of each one, the risks, the alternatives. And I find that when a patient can be fully informed and empowered to create their own choice, because it's not my choice to make for each patient, it's my job to educate and empower you to find the best possible healthcare solution for you. So we always provide all of the information with clinical studies where applicable and obtainable to support each treatment plan. So really looking at diet and lifestyle are going to be key, sleep's going to be key, perceiving your stress, your healthy fats in your diet, making sure you have protein at each meal, doing some resistance training, getting functional lab testing done so we know where your levels are and then treating accordingly.
Spectacular. Yeah, that's, I mean, very important, I think, for people to understand informed consent in their healthcare, what they're getting from their doctor, whether it's from us or a conventional medical doctor or nurse practitioner. You know, you need to know the pros, cons, the side effects, how this is going to go and how it goes for most people and how it might go for you. So
exactly.
And, you know, eating those brassica vegetables, the cruciferous vegetables, can be very helpful. And like you said, you may need DIM, like a DIM capsule or gel cap, and take that every morning or whatever is recommended by your practitioner based on your lab results. And I get questions like you probably do all the time on social media, you know, people messaging me and saying like, hey, I have these things going on. I actually had lab results, or I didn't have lab results, but this is going on and I'm this age and blah, blah, blah. Like, can you just help me, tell me one or three supplements I can go buy? And the answer is no. So, you know, because that's a disservice to the person, where if you don't have individualized lab testing and, you know, hopefully some genetic testing, and you don't have, you know, the Dutch test or at least blood testing beyond what they think they have. And usually they're coming to us and they haven't had a complete workup and they think they have because their doctor tells them every year, well, you're fine. You know, your conventional blood tests show that you're normal. And nobody's really looked underneath the hood and said like, hey man, like putting the duct tape or the electrical tape over that check engine light in the low gas light for 15 years or 2 years or whatever it is, hasn't turned out that well for you. So let's do a deeper dive. So I really appreciate your approach and I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with everybody. And it's great to have the female perspective because obviously I'm a male and most people coming into our offices typically are female as naturopathic doctors. And in the cases that we see, they may be dragging their husband or boyfriend in eventually and saying like, hey, it's time for you to optimize your hormones. So hopefully, you know, maybe this could play the other way where the men getting help can say, hey, you know, you think you're optimizing your hormones and your health, but this could be the next step, you know, beyond just thyroid medication in a multivitamin, which is, you know, that's a good place to start, but that's not the end all be all. So, and a lot of people think that, hey, I'm doing all I can. I'm taking vitamin D and thyroid medication and a multivitamin and I exercise. And it's like, well, you know, good for you, but there's a lot more out there. If you're not feeling well, then something else is probably going on. If you haven't gotten gut testing done, if you haven't gotten a Dutch test done, if you haven't reached out to like Breanne, Dr. Breanne, and figured out what can be helpful for you. So where can people find you? Where can people find you on Instagram and Facebook? And what is the website that they should go to?
Absolutely. So the best way to connect is through my social media, Instagram, it's Breanne Callinan. We also have a free Facebook community resource where we have lots of information and education uploaded daily, but as well as under the files section. That is Wildside Community on Facebook. And my website is BreanneCallinan.com or WildsideWellness.com. And the biggest piece of advice, if you've listened all the way to the end, is always ask why. If your thyroid is low, you're given a prescription, ask why it's low. Really focus on getting to that root cause. And once you do that, you can truly make huge changes in your health and optimize your health so that you can go on to be everything you want to be, as confident as you want to be, and get all those things done that you are meant to do and want to do.
Spectacular. Thank you again for being on the show. And everybody listening, please share with your husband, your wife, your friends, your family. This is free information, and hopefully you're able to eat it up and implement and find yourself a naturopathic physician or functional medicine doctor near you, or Dr. Breanne, if you're in the greater Toronto area or want to work with her remotely, because she does that around the world. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all next time. Have a good one. Bye.
Thank you.
Now, here's for my mandatory disclaimer. This is a medical information podcast and is only for general information purposes. It does not substitute or constitute the practice of medicine or any medical practices, including the giving of medical advice to any individual. And please observe that no doctor-patient relationship has been formed here. This medical podcast offers health, hormone, fitness, and nutrition information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitution for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Do not disregard, avoid, or delay obtaining medical or health-related advice and appropriate treatment from your healthcare professional. Users should seek the care of their physician or healthcare professional for any such conditions. The use of any information provided on this podcast is solely at your own risk. The contents and topics of this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA nor approved by any other government or official body. The topics and content covered is not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease or disorder of any kind. Developments in medical research may impact the health, fitness, and nutritional advice that appears here on the podcast in the future episodes. No assurance can be given that the advice contained in this podcast will always include the most recent findings or developments in medicine with respect to the particular material covered. If you are in the United States and think you are having a medical or health emergency, call your healthcare professional or 911 immediately. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and looking forward to have you on future podcasts.